This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh and Kusu Chuang, bringing you the top business headlines of the day. Now, let's come back to some interesting domestic news. The Inland Revenue Board has said it might wind up a listed company soon to recover backdated taxes. The company remains unnamed, but it already noted that it's placed 91 publicly traded companies on surveillance.
Yes, Sharad. So in an interview with the Malaysian Reserve, RRB CEO Datuk Sabin Samitah said that the RRB could be winding up a listed firm if the corporate does not pay its outstanding taxes of 42 million ringgit by this week. And this company is involved in the tourism, hospitality, resort and golf industry.
So we're not going to speculate, are we?
No, I don't know. There are no names, but they just mentioned the industry that this company's in and how much backdated taxes it owes. That's 42 million.
So Chuang, Joyce obviously doesn't understand the joys of speculation.
Well, we won't speculate because it's dangerous to do so. But what we do know, in the past few months from the news flow, companies like Magnum have been under the spotlight, I think hit by a nearly half billion ringgit tax penalty. MK Land has been under the spotlight. And of course, Country Heights and its founder, CEO, has also been under the spotlight. So any one of these companies could be the subject of the Inland Revenue's adorations.
Okay, so this number, 91 publicly listed companies, how much of that constitutes the main board?
That's about 10%, because the main market has about 806 companies listed there, and ACE market is 114. So that comes out to about 920 companies listed. So actually, it's a substantial amount of companies that has come under the radar of RRB.
Okay, looks like the taxman is really very serious. Sabin also said that IRB's 2017 strategic aims is to weed out non-compliance. Now, what does this mean?
Well, I guess it means that they're looking at taxpayers who are not compliant with the tax law and the spirit of the whole tax law. Actually, in the first 7 months of this year, 30 listed companies have been audited and were subjected to tax penalties of 1.09 billion ringgit. They also said that they are closely monitoring high net worth individuals, and they recently froze accounts of 428 individuals and companies. So it looks like they're looking at companies that are aggressively tax planning.
Aggression. We know this because the city is full of road rage and parking rage, steering locks notwithstanding. What does it really mean to talk about aggressive tax planning?
When you give accountants M16s and AK-47s. No, not really.
Metaphorical ones.
No, okay. So under the theoretical definitions, tax planning happens when corporates undertake specific corporate arrangements under law to reduce tax liability. But the IRB believes that there are some who tax plan to escape and to evade paying higher taxes, which obviously in the letter of the law is illegal.
Right. So we always make this distinction between tax evasion and tax avoidance, right? So what else do we have in terms of the numbers coming from IRB?
Well, according to the data here, most companies audited for aggressive tax planning are in the financial and banking investment sectors, insurance, asset management. So clearly, because of the many layers of transactions involved, there are many ways to avoid tax and not to evade tax.
But it's also avoid, evade perhaps, but the main thing I guess they should look at is efficient tax planning. Efficient tax planning perhaps could be okay. But evading and avoiding, perhaps not so.
You know, this idea of, you know, good corporate citizenship, and I think in a letter that was put up by one of these individuals who was targeted by the IRB, he said, you know, I think in his own defense that he's always been a good corporate citizen, that, you know, corporations understand the importance of paying taxes. And I think that's something that's an interesting conversation to have as well. Now, moving on to transport, the construction and property group Maju Holdings has made an offer to EPF and UEM, a group, to take over Highway Operator Plus Malaysia. Plus, Chairman Tan Sri Mohd Sharif Mohd Kassim confirmed that a letter of intent sent by Maju had been received. Chuang, what do we have in terms of the background to the story?
Well, the Edge story actually today confirms that this letter of offer has been submitted to the relevant authorities because it's been confirmed by a spokesperson from Maju. And they've actually hired a firm called Evercore Group, which is an investment advisory firm, to help with the acquisition. No financial details from Jose Baroque's story, but it refers to the transaction reflecting the enterprise value of Plus Expressways to the tune of about 36 billion ringgit. So that's a lot of money. So under the plan, the speculation is that Maju will freeze toll rate increases for 20 years until the end of the concession period, and in the process reduce the government's contingent liabilities by 30 billion ringgit.
That's extraordinary.
There's a lot of money. So I just want to quote Tan Sri Abu Sahid. He's the head honcho of Maju Holdings. He said he's very confident of pulling it off. He's got everything ready. He's got the money. He's got the blessings of the highest levels in the country. He has the advisors and the bankers already. He has the formula to do it, unquote.
Yeah, well, but EPF side has said a few weeks later after that that they have no plans to dispose their stake in PLUS because it was reaping good returns. You know, because over the past 5 years, I think PLUS has paid some 2.85 billion ringgit in dividends to its shareholders, and this is UEM and EPF. So, I mean, it's a good earnings income stream for them.
What about the question of previous offers and why those fell through?
Well, remember a few years ago, I think 2012, we spoke to a gentleman named Tan Sri Said Muhammad Almin Al-Jafri. He was the chairman of a company called Asa Serba. And I think he also runs the Malay Chamber of Commerce. He had cobbled together a consortium, including the former COO of Plus Expressways, a gentleman named Ibrahim Bidin, to put out a similar takeover offer for the expressways, and I think which didn't get to fruition because obviously it didn't meet the required levels of approval. But he's not the first person, because Tan Sri Halim Saad also, via his vehicle, put in an unsolicited offer in 2014 for the same thing. So obviously there's something within the North-South Highway and Plus Expressways, which also, by the way, has several other smaller highways within its fold, that it thinks that it can make money from.
Well, it looks like everybody's looking into this, but if this goes through, it elevates the burden of paying compensation in lieu of toll increases. Because in February 2014, then Deputy Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin announced there will be no toll rate hikes for 2014 in the Klang Valley. Instead, for 400 million ringgit in compensation would be paid to expressway concessionaires. And it looks like, according to a Khazana 2016 report, the last time PLUS hiked rates was in January 2005.
You know, this is a hot political potato, isn't it? Because if you raise toll rates, you kind of incur the ire of voters. On the other hand, it seems extraordinary that a small segment of Malaysians get such a huge subsidy for their personal transport needs, as opposed to people around the country, people in Sabah and Sarawak, and all those of us who don't use private vehicles and just use public transport.
Well, you can actually go from KL to Penang or KL to Johor on the secondary old roads. I mean, it's entirely within your remit to do so.
Or take the train.
Or take the
electric trains, which are fabulous.
Absolutely. So, I mean, all this is basically, I mean, the biggest factor behind why the government would listen to, whether it's Tan Sri Abu Sahid or whether it's Tan Sri Said Amin Al-Jafri, is because it alleviates their burden of paying this compensation every year. And according to Khazana, it's something in the region of 800 million ringgit since 2010. So there's a lot of money that's at stake here.
And a lot of cars in the picture. What do we have in terms of the broad portrait for the car of the vehicle sales sector?
Well, you see, so staying on the transport theme, according to the news reports, the first half car sales numbers have Malaysians buying about 285,000 cars for the first half of 2017, which is a 3.3% increase from a year ago, which is still a growth rate. But it's I'm not sure exactly what the expectations were, but I think 5 to 6% would have been realistic for the car industry to have hit a quantum of increase. But 3.3% is still by most accounts moribund.
So it looks like looking at market share, Honda is 18.5% for first half of 2017. Toyota is 11.9%. Proton is 13.8%. So all of that seems to have increased.
Yeah, I just want to point out the fact that Honda actually rose, had a 4.5% or 4-odd% increase in percentage point market share from a year ago. And that's, I think that's quite incredible, because actually, if you're a car player, obviously driven by sales of the new Civic, the new BRV. So it's all to play for. So it's all in the affordable segment, I think, which is where the game is.
When we talk about cars, right, globally the conversation seems to have shifted away from this fossil fuel guzzling cars to the talk about electric cars and actually doing something on the climate change front and doing something good for the planet.
Yes, exactly. So this is the thing, right? It's a bit like having quotas in the Malaysia. If you don't have a top-down, policy-driven, quota-driven approach, you can't get the you can't get to the targets, whether it's gender diversity, whether it's, you know,
ethnic group parity. Yeah.
So if you introduce a voluntary element to this whole equation, you might not get there. And then if you offer subsidies, then, you know, there's a whole profit motive thing. So overnight in the press, Daimler, you know, suggested to the media that if it were not for government subsidies that helped the EV sector, there was no way the EV sector could pay for itself. So, you know, you take away those subsidies and you analyze, say, something like Tesla, right? The biggest markets in the world are in the UK, in Norway, Hong Kong. And then Hong Kong, once those subsidies are removed, and they did get removed in the early part of this year, suddenly the whole market collapses. So it's really a whole theoretical discussion about getting to the end goal.
Right. Actually, we spoke about this yesterday. China is also looking at electric cars and what they're doing. And talking about Hong Kong, you can see that one of the top Hong Kong billionaire, Lee Ka-shing, agreed to buy an indirect stake in a Japanese maker of electric cars, expanding his investment into that area. So it looks like even Lee is looking at this industry. It looks like everyone's banking into this industry. And China is pushing to phase out gasoline and diesel vehicles.
You know, have you guys ever walked in the city? I mean, seriously, just walked in, whether in one of the great cities of the world, whether it's in London or KL. Yeah, KL, one of the great cities of the world. You know,
it's not a bad city,
it's
actually.
It's not bad, you know?
I take public transport, and I walk a lot. In fact, I used to have a column in one of the local newspapers called The Pedestrian.
Exactly, you did. Ashish Sharad, Shrani Beacon there. You know, so like say in Kota Raya, right, you walk along the street. It's terrible because the fumes, the smoke, the diesel, it's quite unbearable. So imagine if you had a time in the future, not too distant from now, where you've got electric vehicles and EV vehicles which don't emit these noxious fumes. How pleasant it would be.
Yeah, but to give a little plug for the small, modest city of Kuala Lumpur, Think City has transformed some of the inner parts
of the KL. Absolutely, fantastic work being done there.
Very walkable. It created little areas for people to sit. And yeah, the fumes are still there. And, one day we will get beyond that. But we hope.
Penang is also very walkable.
Exactly. So Penang has been trying to introduce this whole bicycle culture there. And imagine a time in the future, hopefully not too far from now, when you've got limited vehicles in the city, and those vehicles that are in the city are electric vehicles, right?
Okay, folks, I just want to, I think, confess here, I'm surrounded by Penangites. I
mean, you are.
Literally, Choice Go, Kusu Chuck. We're coming up to the news. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.